Right, now we'll do 1334, sorry. That is amend transient lodgings tax to add definitions and clarify duties for operators for short-term rental locations.
Okay, all right. We're dealing with the revenue issue today, and 1333 is held over. Thank you. Okay, so now call on Thomas Lanham to take us through this set of proposals in front of us, which are code changes regarding short-term rentals and how they pay their taxes.
All right, thank you, Mayor. I'm Thomas Lanham with the Revenue Division, and this is Terry Williams, also with the Revenue Division. So short-term rental compliance is the issue before this body today. Compliance with Title VI, which is the Transient Lodging Tax Code, is currently estimated at about 72%. And this is mostly on the strength of the tax collection agreement that we have with Airbnb. By contrast, our brick-and-mortar standard hotel, motel in the city, we have a compliance rate of about 99%. So that's the target rate that we want to be looking to with respect to the transient lodging tax code. For short-term rental, single-family residential locations, compliance with Title 33, the planning and zoning code, is currently estimated at about 7 to 8%. According to figures from BDS, 110 short-term rental operators have applied for their permits. There are over 1,000 short-term rental locations that are not compliant with Title 33. And incidentally, going back to Title VI, there are about 900 locations that are not compliant with Title VI, the hotel-motel tax. City Council legalized single-family residential short-term rentals on July 30th. BDS began issuing permits in September. And even if we assume compliance increases at the net rate of 3% per month, which is what it has been increasing since September, it would take almost 3 years to get to 100% compliance. And I remain very skeptical that we would ever get anywhere near that number, given there are currently very few to no incentives for people to come into compliance with the code. Our efforts at education and outreach aimed at voluntary compliance have, to this point, not succeeded. And this is largely due to the fact that the booking interface available on the platforms is opaque in that the actual operator information is obscured until the transaction is finalized. Under these conditions, a one-by-one, peck-and-scratch type approach to enforcement is untenable. In 2013, the Revenue Division directly emailed 240 short-term rental operators using the contact function available on one of the leading industry platforms. We received only 40 responses to that mailing, which is about 17%. And that's just the responses. That's not people that came into compliance. The actual number of those, the 40 that came into compliance, is much lower. Also in 2013, the Revenue Division mailed a letter to each of the major platforms asking for a list of local operators to more directly contact the individual operators about their code requirements. None of the platforms were willing to do this, and at least one of them, representing several others as doing business as, cited our lack of code authority to ask for that information. So the ordinance before you today would amend the city code, Title VI, and give the Revenue Division additional enforcement authority to close the compliance gap. First, upon request to the city, short-term rental platforms must provide the city a list of operator locations, names, and contact information. And that part that I said about upon request to the city is very important. That's not the place that we intend to start the day after or after we have the authority if council grants it. Rather, we'll enter into a dialogue now that we have a new piece of leverage with each of the major platforms and ask them to help us to bring their operators into compliance. Second, it requires short-term rental platforms to collect and remit hotel-motel taxes if they are collecting payments from guests. Otherwise, they would not have to do that. And simply put, if they're not collecting the money and they don't know the amount of the transaction, it's unreasonable for us to expect them to remit our tax for us. Third, it requires short-term rental platforms to post a BDS-issued permit number on the web advertisement for each operator location. And then finally, fourth, it provides for penalties of up to $500 per violation. And again, that up to language is important. We do look at each circumstance differently when it comes to the circumstances and the facts that lead us to potentially impose a penalty. So we also have a couple of amendments before you. One of them, I don't think I have it here, Terry. Thank you. The first one.
These are in your December 16th memorandum?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. It's got some yellow highlighting. You should have it before you now.
Okay, got it.
So I'll allow Terry to read these into the record if that's part of what we need to do here. But I guess what I would summarize them as is that we would further tighten the language around who is accepting a payment and what does that mean to an accept a payment. And then the second one would, to address some concerns that we've heard about confidentiality, would attempt to extend confidentiality to those operators that had their names disclosed to us by the platform that they're affiliated with. I should probably note that to the extent that an operator is compliant with local law, that is to say the BDS Title 33 code as well as our Title 6, they're required to have a BDS permit number, and they're therefore not, that would not be confidential information. So this provision right here would only extend confidentiality to non-compliant operators that we have the names for from the hosts, or the platforms. So I'll conclude my remarks there and ask if there are any questions.
You want to get Terry to go through the amendments?
Yes,
yeah, I'll read those in so that we've got those in front of us and take questions.
So Terry Williams, Revenue Division. The first one is to amend the proposed new City Code Section 6.04.040B that basically more broadly describes what accepting payments would be. So it would strike out the term accepting payments and say directly or indirectly accepts, receives, or facilitates payment, including through application programming interfaces, APIs, or other computerized devices where third-party providers receive information about a transaction and collect funds that may or may not be transmitted to the operator, owner, or other person offering a short-term rental. So that's the expanded language instead of just accepting payments. So that's the first one. The second proposal is to amend the proposed new City Code Section 6.04.040C to clarify that names and addresses of the host information received from the booking agent to us is considered confidential. And so that's adding an additional sentence at the end of that section that says, any location and related contact information provided under this subsection is considered confidential and is not subject to public disclosure due to personal privacy concerns.
And I believe that provision is founded on some state law that allows us to do that, right?
I believe so, yes. Yeah. And that's okay. The city attorney has reviewed that.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Commissioner Fish, questions?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Thomas, under the penalty provision, how frequently can revenue impose a penalty for a violation?
Potentially daily if the violation is ongoing. However, we would be very measured in our application of that. We've only used that penalty 6 times in the last year. So a penalty, an ongoing violation would need to be flagrant, would need to be in the face of repeated warnings from the Bureau. We would be very, very, it would be a very rare set of facts that would compel us to use a penalty that aggressively.
Okay. Does revenue have the capacity to enforce this ordinance?
Yes and no.
You've covered all your bases.
Yes, yes, I have. The answer is yes, to the extent that we are acting, the platforms that actually collect payments are acting as our tax remittance agent, much as Airbnb does. There's very little work for us to do there. We want to audit those platforms from time to time, but there's no actual account hands-on one location after another. At least one major platform has a business model where they are not the merchant of record. They're not collecting the revenues. And so for that particular platform, we need all the host names, and we would actually have to set up a separate account for each of those. And so what we signaled in the ordinance in one of the whereases or findings, I forget which, is if we get inundated with those individual locations, I will need to come back to the council and ask for some appropriation for a position. Hence, yes and no.
Reminds me, Mayor, of a joke that my friend Barney Frank used to tell, and the punchline was the windbag senator on the floor of the Senate saying, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chairman, half of my friends support this amendment, and half of my friends oppose it, and today I proudly stand with my friends.
I assume I'm the windbag senator.
No. We have five choices on this panel. You're by no means. BDS uses a complaint-based enforcement model. What will revenue's model look like?
Well, our model will be first to following, assuming the council approves this new level of authority for the Bureau, we will send notification to each of the booking agents, as they're now defined in the code, and inform them as to their as to the new enforcement tools that we have. And we will, at first, simply and strongly encourage them to get their operators into compliance. So I don't need to ask for a list of every single location if the platforms are aggressively and effectively helping their local operators to come into compliance with the code. So that would be the starting place. To the extent that they're not successful or they're unwilling to assist, then at that point we would begin exercising our code authority.
Won't you have to look at actual listings to see if the listings are including the permits, the permit numbers?
Yes, that's correct.
Do you have the resources to do that?
Yes, with the penalties that we're talking about, I don't anticipate that the platforms are going to want to continue carrying advertisements that are non-compliant. That said, certainly it would be reasonable for us to implement some administrative rules, and we can do that under our code authority, to make it clear that if we hear from a platform, for example, that they're not, that they feel that they're going to need 90 days or 180 days, there may be contracts, for example, between the platform and the local operator that speak to confidentiality, and perhaps that contract needs to expire or be amended. So we're going to listen to certain reasonable issues like that before we begin combing and penalizing.
Okay, but at least initially, I mean, to convince them you need mean business, you, with your existing personnel, can look through the listings and call up one of the hosts and or the platform operators and say, you've got 65 listings right now in Portland that don't have a permit attached to them, and pay up.
Yes. So right now, you can go through, I think they display 10 or 15 results at a time. There is, for example, one of the platforms has already created a field that captures the BDS permit number. So for that particular platform, it's a major player in the market, we think that we could probably go through that within a couple hours anyway and sort of itemize the number of listings.
What about the
others? Again, it's the creation of a large volume of accounts from some platforms that would be the driver for needing to ask for more resources.
And I had one other question, and thank you for your succinct answers. And that has to do with the privacy issue. Now, Commissioner Fritz has raised this issue.
Excuse me.
I'm inclined to support the amendment, and she's made a strong argument about the privacy issues. But the two concerns I have are, number one, would that change impede your ability to enforce the law?
No.
I don't believe so, no.
And the second, I was just curious on generally about the question of privacy. So I asked someone in my staff to find me a room or a house to rent in my neighborhood, anticipating that the moment is coming sooner rather than later when my wife throws me out of my house. And we picked two houses nearby off Craigslist and two off the Oregonian. In each instance, there's a picture of the house with an address. And in one instance, it actually has a series of photographs documenting every room in the house. Actually, in more than one instance, it has all the rooms documented. And so, again, I think this privacy issue is very important, and it's important to my friend and colleague. But I just want to note that And because it doesn't impact your ability to enforce the law, I'm not going to object. But I just would note that in the ads we pulled up, and this is typical of the marketplace, addresses, pictures of the house, and other information are listed. And so if at some point this did become somehow an impediment to enforcement, I would want to revisit the question.
I understand, and I should probably clarify one point. It's not an impediment to enforcement for revenue. However, if we turn that list over to BDS, I'm informed that then it would become a public record. It could be requested once it's in BDS's possession. So maintaining that confidentiality, if we're bent on maintaining the confidentiality, then that could create a problem for BDS in terms of their enforcement. I've talked with Mike, the enforcement division manager, Mike Liefeld, and we've talked about sending joint letters that would discuss both code languages if we needed to. So that would be our initial approach.
So that's a little different than I understood your earlier answer. So under this amendment, we would in fact be making it more difficult for BDS to do the code enforcement?
To the extent that we want to maintain confidentiality for non-compliant operators that we receive from the platforms, yes. To the extent that we're willing to let go of that confidentiality protection, then no, because once it reaches BDS, it's no longer considered confidential.
Do you draw a distinction between preserving the confidentiality of a compliant host and a non-compliant host?
Well, it's an interesting question. It's one I've given some thought to.
Well, I mean, at some point, do you lose the benefit of this protection if you are disregarding our laws, which, after all, are designed to protect the health and safety of the guests?
Actually, it's the other way around, that our complaints are confidential, our non-complaints are not.
I'm sorry, so what were you going to say?
Can you restate the question? I'm sorry.
Well, so you've described a situation where if we maintain the confidentiality, it creates potentially a complication for BDS. But in the instance in which you may be turning to BDS, the host is potentially in violation of our law. Should we give the same weight to privacy in those instances that we do to an otherwise compliant host?
Well, I would think not, but I would reiterate that compliant hosts are 100% out there already. So at some point, I think it would be reasonable. I think the voice that's not at this table is BDS's voice, to the extent that, you know, do they have resources and is that a list that they would welcome receiving? I think those are the kinds of, some of the things that feed into this discussion. That said, my personal perspective would be that revenue sending out reasonable letters informing individual hosts that were at correction operators that were at that point still confidential from public disclosure, that at some point, if they failed to come into compliance, that we may very well determine that we're going to turn that list over to BDS and they will do with it what they will. And then at that point, the record becomes disclosed or disclosable to the public.
And that's one of two instances where it could become disclosable. The other is if a third party challenges the confidentiality and the district attorney or a court determines it in the public interest to disclose it.
And that's correct.
So are these amendments primarily to get taxes, or are they primarily to get compliance with the code and the permit requirements?
Well, both, really. We're hearing pretty universally that there's a compliance gap both on both sides, the Title VI and the Title 33. So this amendment would help us to address both.
But primarily, I believe, it is to get taxes.
And the challenge with the taxes is that we have one platform who are actually taking responsibility to provide us with the taxes, and then we have others which are not.
That's correct.
And this ordinance doesn't discriminate between those two, even though we have one that's already providing us the taxes.
That's correct. It doesn't discriminate between the two. It's treating the entire market the same.
So I think that's of concern to me, that we've got one company that has been working with us and seems to be doing what they need to be doing, and we have the option of auditing them like we do other franchises to make sure that they're paying the right amount of taxes, mm-hmm. and yet we're having this broad brush approach. Second concern I have is that it seems like people expect confidentiality in their tax matters, especially. We're hearing that in the street funding discussions, that people consider their income taxes very private information. And so is there any other precedent where we use tax information to enforce another provision of our codes and policies?
Well, the actual taxpayer in this case is not the operator or the platform. It's the occupant of the room that's paying the tax. So that construct, I don't think, applies in this case.
Well, can
go
I?
Ahead. Terry, do you have other
actually,
thoughts?
We do, in fact, view the operator as a taxpayer because we put the burden on them to step in our choose to receive that and basically be that link. We were recently, a reporter tried to compel us to release transient lodging tax payment information of one particular taxpayer and went to the district attorney, and we prevailed in that. So we, because our code is very specific about protecting that. So at least in dealing with those, the tax information, the city code and then other provisions of the state public records law does protect financial information very much so, and we take that to heart, and we do protect that absolutely.
Right, and I stand corrected.
I'm sorry?
Thank you.
Well, except when we're going to give it to BDS.
Well, that's not a name isn't a financial information normally.
Right. I think that's the distinction here. The bare fact, I'll just give you another example. Each of the individual operators in the city of Portland, each location, they should have a business registration with the city.
Well, right, do we go after other home-based businesses that are not paying their taxes? Do we investigate those? And does that information get passed to BDS to make sure that they get a Type B home business permit?
Oftentimes, we actually use information from BDS to pursue some of those with data matches.
But do you do it the other way?
If they asked for it, yes, we would.
But they don't.
But they haven't at this point.
Could I ask Mayor, or could I ask Mike Leafield to come from Development Services?
Sure.
So do you have the capacity in Development Services to take this information and start tracking down the 1,500 or more owners, operators who are not currently have permits?
I believe we would have some good capacity to take a first step. If we had a list, we could easily generate a mass mailing we could structure them as courtesy warning letters. We could follow our adopted process for actual code violation letters, instituting our compliance period and enforcement regime. So there's a number of things that we could do, and that would be pretty easy if we had the host name and address. That would be a simple mail merge, and we could complete that.
And then if they ignore that letter, then what?
If they ignore that letter, then we have to take the next step of enforcement. And so there are additional resources, staff time that would be necessary to potentially verify violations, assess the penalties, and continue to assess penalties in the hopes of gaining compliance.
And do you know offhand what the current wait time is for complaints on other code violations such as nuisance properties?
We currently have a pretty large backlog for housing complaints. For typical zoning and nuisance complaints, prior to losing some staff with some turnover, we were meeting our service goal of 3 to 5 business days, and we are in the hiring process to fill those vacant positions right now. So I believe probably in the next 3 to 4 months we will return to that service level goal of 3 to 5 day response time to complaints.
And then in housing and the housing complaints?
Housing complaints is a different story. Different certified inspectors do that work, so it is apples to oranges. With those inspections, I think we have many positions to fill, so we're a ways off from meeting our service level goals in response times, unfortunately.
What's the current percentage of noncompliance now with the mere registration requirement that we have?
On the transient lodging side?
Yeah.
Well, I'll structure the answer this way. The compliance rate for taxes paid on that side is about 72%.
Right. But what percentage of people have filed to seek a permit?
Well,
we've received 110 applications.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's 7 to 8%.
Right.
Yeah.
7 to 8% of the assumed universe are people who have sought a permit, so presumably over 90% of the market is now currently operating outside of our regulatory framework.
Well, and I don't think there's a lot of presumption about it. We actually went through each platform, each major platform, looked for Portland listings that appear to be in Portland, and then put in search terms like single-family dwelling, the terms that are applicable for a single-family location, because we're not talking about multifamily yet in terms of that compliance rate, just single-family. And so we found about 1,300 locations, and only 105, or 110 rather, have requested permits. So that's 7 to 8%.
What was the 72% you mentioned earlier?
The transient lodging tax code compliance
combined between
hotels, motels paying.
The hotel motel's compliance rate is 99% of the brick and mortar, and that, whereas the short-term rental is much smaller. So when you combine them, it's at about 72%.
But the good news is we're getting taxes on almost a little more than two-thirds of the units. The bad news for the guests is that over 90% of the units potentially don't meet our code requirements for health, for safety and health.
That's right.
No.
Further questions? Okay. Thank you. Do we have people signed up to testify, Carla?
Yes, we have three people signed up. The first three, please come up, are Scott Breen, Gwen Baldwin, and David Owen.
Welcome. So if you, all you need to do is give us your name, and you each have 3 minutes. And we'll start with you, sir.
Scott Breen, Chief Strategy Officer of Vacasa, Portland's homegrown vacation rental management company. We welcome the council's enforcement efforts, and we look forward to working with you on some of the more nuanced aspects of that enforcement. Some of the issues that might come up that haven't been addressed previously is that many homeowners actually have houses on multiple listing sites, and it being one of the fastest growing industries in the country, there's more than 100 new listing sites every month. So as if the goal is to go after listing sites because there's few of them, that will quickly change. Also, if the homeowner is liable to pay the taxes, but we're holding the listing sites accountable for paying those taxes, you will actually get multiple returns from multiple listing sites for the same property, which can create a lot of confusion for homeowners. Just wanted to throw a few of those things out there that didn't sound like they had been discussed previously.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Gwen Baldwin. I'm here today representing Multifamily Northwest, and in large part because I think it's important when we come, any entity comes before you and shares concerns and shares feedback, that when you are responsive, that we come back and say thank you. At our last hearing around short-term rentals for multifamilies, we expressed some concern about the lack of an enforcement mechanism that didn't focus on the property owner as opposed to the active participants in this new shared economy. And I really appreciate the work of the Revenue Department and your staff and the fact that you're having this conversation about a more engaged, focused enforcement mechanism. So thank you.
David?
Hello, everybody. David Owen with Airbnb. Thank you for the opportunity, and I want to thank staff, specifically Revenue, for taking some time to talk with us as they're over the last week or two about sort of the history of the development of this ordinance. And just wanted to, speaking of history, walk through some of the background between our discussions with the city on these issues. It seems like there are two primary policy matters driving this ordinance before us. The first is the enforcement of the recently adopted short-term rental rules, and the other is the collection of the lodging tax. And on that second issue, we engaged with the city and subsequently the county and state in negotiating what was at the time for us the first in the world voluntary collection agreement to collect on behalf from the guests, on behalf of our hosts, and remit to the city on a periodic basis. And it was something that was unprecedented not only for us but as an industry at that point in time, and that we were excited to move forward with because we understood the importance of that issue to the city and to cities in general. We now find ourselves in a situation where it feels to some as though being the first mover now comes with the drawback of potentially creating a target of more data for the city to come and attempt to enforce the rest of the ordinances that may be applicable to this activity. And it's a concern for us because we look at this and Commissioner Fritz, I think, touched on some of these points when you were talking about how BDS and the Revenue Bureau share information. And we see, and in talking to tax collection officials around the country, we certainly hear from others that they try to communicate to taxpayers that they are only using taxpayer data to enforce the revenue codes because they tend to find, certainly in the case of San Francisco, this is their position, that that helps them maximize tax returns. If taxpayers aren't concerned that government is going to use that data for any number of other enforcement purposes. But in the context of online privacy, I think that becomes even more important because we don't, as a matter of course, rely on website platforms like Google or Yahoo or any number of other internet sites to facilitate enforcing local zoning codes and to share data to that end. You know, many of us have smartphones in our pockets, and these are a revolution in technology in the last 10 years, both phone calls, data, and text messaging. Verizon, Apple, AT&T, any of these companies could tell how quickly I'm driving down a freeway at any point in time or whether I'm sending text messages while I'm doing it, a violation of the law in most states and for good reason. But we don't automatically require those companies to report that data to government in order to I apologize if I'm going over my time, but we don't enforce speeding rules by requiring Apple or Verizon or AT&T to report that data because consumers have an expectation that that is private and that that is not how government will enforce those rules. Instead, in the context of text messaging, we see innovative partnerships to educate users about the importance of safety and to increase compliance and to issue tickets when violations are observed by law enforcement. And these get more complicated in the context of online commerce because as it has exploded in the last 15 years, there's a tantalizing target of data. There's one point of contact for user data that makes it much easier for government to enforce a host of laws. But we've also decided, as the internet has developed, that that is not something that consumers are comfortable with. And in the context of this ordinance, it's concerning to us that the city would rely upon user data without a subpoena, outside of the context of formal legal process, similar, frankly, to what the NSA was seeking from companies like Yahoo and Google, which was so objectionable, and the SOPA-PIPA fight that we saw, that government would rely upon an internet platform to simply send data to the city in order to help them enforce the law without a subpoena in a broad fashion.
You're going to have all the time you need because you're here in this great conversation. I need to clarify a few things. Do you support Commissioner Fritz's amendment?
What member? What's my amendment?
You mean the amendments that were just here?
Excuse me. Do you?
Those are not mine.
Those are the Revenue Bureau's
amendments. Do you support the revenue? I'm getting a headache here. I just want to make sure we know where we are and what lane we're in. The Revenue Bureau has proposed an amendment which would treat the information that you've just addressed as confidential. Do you support that amendment?
Well, I think we saw in some of the exchange between...
We have an amendment on the table, and it doesn't have anything to do with the exchange. It has to do with you represent a company that will be regulated. It's a yes or no question. Do you support the amendment?
We are concerned about a precedent that enables the city to request unfettered data outside of formal legal process from a platform in order to enforce the zoning code.
Okay. So let me go back to something you started with. And you said this is the first voluntary agreement in the world. It's unprecedented. And I just want to put that in context. This is not a state where the attorney general has taken you to court and gotten that information through a judge's ruling. This is a state and a city where the mayor has welcomed you to the city and has struck a bargain. But if this was New York, if you want to talk about precedent, you have an attorney general declaring war on your company and a judge compelling you to turn over the data of all of your hosts. That has not been the way we have approached it. So I understand in the heat of the moment you may feel strongly about this, but the only person you left out of your thing was Edward Snowden. I think you perhaps are too suspicious of our motives in this. We have two public policy things we have to oblige here. One is we're levying a tax, and we cannot just go off of your representation that all the tax has been paid. We don't have that relationship with any taxpayer, and we can't extend that courtesy to you.
If I may on that point, Commissioner, I would be curious to hear the Revenue Bureau's thoughts on whether they feel like the agreement that they've entered into with our platform is sufficient to provide them enough information to be confident that they're being paid the tax they're owed, because it's our understanding that that's not an issue of concern for them.
We'll have them back. The second is, we have a compelling public policy concern of making sure that the hosts follow our local laws so that guests are protected. You share that. We want to make sure that someone who accesses a room in a building that you advertise is safe. And so in order to further both purposes, we have to have some mechanism of verifying. It's called trust but verify. And we're not picking on Airbnb. The kinds of things we're talking about are garden variety. When you bring in online privacy and the suspicion of people about giving confidential tax information, let me go back to the original issue before us. It is whether the host has to disclose their location. And I picked up four hosts in a different context. These are people who rent out their rooms and houses. And they have pictures of the house, pictures of every room, the address and the contact, and then descriptions of the houses. So we're not seeking to bring George Orwell into this conversation. We are seeking to enforce a reasonable set of regulations. And we are a city that is welcoming you, unlike most other cities and states in the country. And we have a regulatory framework that we're trying to enforce. It would give me a lot more confidence to move forward here if you came before us and said, for example, you intend to comply with the regulations that we're about to adopt. That would mean something to me. What I'm hearing you say is you have concerns about them. And if you have concerns about them, that signals that, I guess, that you may not be prepared to tell us today that you're going to comply with them.
Well, I think two points, and I appreciate what you're saying, and I think two points are important. First, the concerns that we're raising are concerns that are not just concerns on our platform or, frankly, in our industry. They're concerns which transcend, I think, all internet platforms and how the structure of online commerce generally is carried out. But on the second point...
Sir, I'm sorry. I can't let that go. Motel 6 advertises on the internet. And the notion that you can claim internet privacy because you are like somewhere between a hotel and a motel is absurd. It is a new part of commerce, and the city council has showed admirable flexibility in adapting to it. But to claim that somehow you're not even in the family of motel, hotels, and other types of lodgings that advertise on the net and are required to provide certain information, I think doesn't pass the giggle test.
Commissioner, you may misunderstand me. I think the difference is we would share the same issue with any of those businesses to the extent they have an online presence, which is if you wanted to obtain confidential user data from any of those enterprises, whether a brick-and-mortar business with an online presence or a platform that's primarily internet-based like ours, you would need to send them a subpoena, and they would need to notify their users, probably under their terms of service. And I think that's the critical difference. But on your second point, we share the city's concern and commitment to public safety and ensuring that our units, that folks who are staying in Airbnb listings in Portland and around the world are safe. That is a principal concern for us, and it's heartening to know that the vast majority of people on our platform are sharing the home in which they live. So they have a concern and a high interest in making sure it's safe for their guests as it is for themselves and their families as well.
92% of your hosts have not sought a permit from the city of Portland.
And I think that's a critical point because we are as concerned as the city about making sure that this ordinance works well. And we want...
You're claiming that the very address of the people who fail to follow our law is somehow confidential. And so that's just an untenable position to claim. You want to have your cake and eat it too. And we have an obligation to go after folks that are not following the law. The only way we do that is we know where they live, and you're claiming that's confidential and somehow an erosion of your privacy rights.
I think it is possible for us to craft an enforcement system that the city is confident in that still protects internet privacy and doesn't require online commerce, any company engaged in online commerce, whether ours or others, to provide unfettered access to private user data without formal legal process, which is a fundamental tenet of internet commerce and something that raises concern for us. But I think we would like to continue working with the city on what is now a just about 6-month-old ordinance in sort of a first of its kind, to understand if it's underutilized, why that's the case, and how we can work with you to bring those numbers substantially up. Because it's as much in our interest for that to occur as it is in yours, but we'd like to do it, and I think there is a way to do it that doesn't raise these privacy concerns, which I would venture to guess if many Portlanders were aware that the city was considering regulation of this type and requiring private internet companies of any kind to turn over user data without that formal process, any user data, sir.
But we're only asking for the address. We're not asking for people's confidential information. We're asking to have an address of a home-based business. And under your view, because that has an internet component, that raises privacy concerns that are different from motels and hotels?
I mean, let's extend this argument to Craigslist, another online platform that's utilized not only by folks in the home rental business, but also by folks who are doing all sorts of things.
I've got the Craigslist ads right here, and people do not feel shy about actually listing a photograph of the house, an address, and a phone number. And some of them have each room photographed so that you can make an informed decision. And that, according to you, is some invasive. According to your logic, these people are engaging in a gross violation of their own privacy rights.
Well, they're controlling their speech and how they choose to put that information on the internet on that platform.
When did this become speech, sir? This is a regulatory. We are regulating an industry, and this is the problem. By the way, this has shades of Uber all over it. We invoke the internet and we claim an exemption from all the other laws and rules of society because we're somehow on the internet. We welcome you to Portland. We're pleased that you've harnessed the internet. But we have to make sure that the guest in one of your host places, and you do not inspect your host places, we have to make sure that that guest is safe. And the only way that the talented professionals who work for the city can do it is to have an address. And if you are going to tell us that we're going to be in litigation for the next 20 years over so-called privacy claims and invasive government in order to get that address, then I don't have a lot of confidence in saying yes to authorizing the underlying conduct. Because if we don't have an enforcement mechanism that works, why on earth will we give you the green light to do something that we can't reasonably enforce?
I appreciate all these concerns. And I think part of our concern about the ordinance that's before you today is, unlike the original ordinance, which was discussed in community meetings and over a period extending well beyond a year, and the multifamily ordinance, which was the subject of a working group that met monthly for several months and involved stakeholders from all different affected areas of the city, this was an ordinance which was not developed out in the open. We were not provided, nor were members of our community, the opportunity to participate. And I think we could have done so in a way that would help the city and help those who were concerned that drove this ordinance to come together to understand the concerns of folks in our world about online privacy, but also help the city accomplish its laudable regulatory goals, which we share. It is as much in our platform and our community's interest for this ordinance to work and for us to continue to celebrate a partnership with the city that is unique and that we point to around the world, as it is for the city to have this ordinance work. And I say that with absolute sincerity.
Well, let me just read you something, because there was an op-ed in the newspaper recently that, and I told the author shortly thereafter, I thought it was a well-written and well-reasoned op-ed. And the author said, "We'll take into account public health and safety and the impacts of our decisions on the community." That was Mayor Hales in the context of Uber. And I thought it was just as applicable in the context of short-term rentals. And if what you're telling us by your presence here today and your testimony is that we're about to green light short-term rentals, but we're going to be in the courts for the rest of my life fighting over whether we could have the right to compel you to tell us the locations of hosts, then that will have an impact on how I view authorizing the underlying conduct. Because these two fit together, and if we don't have an enforcement mechanism, then all we have is a hope and a prayer that we're going to get this right, and we don't have the luxury of doing that. And the first time something bad happens to a guest who's in a unit that someone has not permitted, and that we've all been complicit in hide the ball, we'll all have to account for that.
If I can return, I appreciate your comments, Commissioner, and if I can return this discussion to the ordinance at hand, I think, again, it's a measure that is aimed, as I understand it, at both increasing compliance with the city's tax rules as well as increasing compliance with the city's zoning ordinance through BDS. It seems from the dialogue and certainly in our experience in other cities that relying on the Revenue Bureau to help enforce the zoning code and collect information to that end is fairly unprecedented and is something particularly outside of that context, in the context of online commerce, that makes folks uncomfortable. I think there is a solution that doesn't create a penalty for somebody who stepped forward to negotiate a tax collection agreement. I think what you've heard from some of the other comment today, and certainly in the responses that you may have received from other platforms who are not here today or not in this room, is you're going to have a very difficult time just getting to step one with some other operators, and that their numbers are increasing by the day. So as you are, your points are completely well taken, and as we hear them and I go back and we continue to discuss ways that we can increase compliance with folks in our community and on our platform, which, by the way, will be helped by letting 100% of our community and not just 66% of our community understand that there is a path for them to become regulated and clearly legal in the city of Portland, I would urge you to focus on the first step of making sure you can bring the entire regulated community or the entire community of this activity into tax compliance, and to not use that tax compliance for those who've already stepped forward as a means to further, that some people would consider a penalty. And this is new area for you. It's new area for us, and we're continuing to learn. And there are more participants in the market every week, as you've heard from other folks up here on the stage. So
yeah, let me jump in. I'm not quite clear on where that concern is coming from. Our regulators have some discretion. It would be reasonable to assume that they would focus on areas where the compliance problem was greatest rather than on where it was least.
And I certainly appreciate hearing that. I think in the context of the internet privacy concerns, which I know Commissioner Fish disagrees with.
I have the same concern you do with internet privacy, but I don't concede that providing the address of a unit that is used for commercial purposes and that your company benefits it raises a particularly significant internet privacy concern.
I think that's
the difference. I have huge concerns about the privacy, particularly if I read the paper every day and find out that it's quite likely that nothing on the internet and none of my emails are private as a result of gross violations of people's privacy rights. I share those concerns. We're talking about the address of a host that is a partner with you in a very innovative business model, which you are claiming is somehow covered by some very broadly defined sense of confidentiality and privacy, which by virtue of not producing that information frustrates the ability of our team to enforce the law. That's the discussion. And I really think that the internet piece is a red herring.
In a minute, we might want to call up the city attorney to join this spirited discussion.
I think Commissioner Fish is doing a fine job. And second,
he is an attorney.
I'm not sure you need to say that.
But I do have to say that people are always complaining about government inefficiency. And, sir, you're in effect asking us to be a very inefficient government. I mean, we have an issue with compliance. And actually, it was Mr. Steve Unger of The Lion and Rose that had this, I thought, brilliant idea of why didn't you just require all of the, I forget, you're not hosts, what are you again? The platforms to display, I mean, the host and the platforms to display a permit in any ad. And I thought that was a brilliant idea, and that happened very much out in the open. I think we said it at the time it was a brilliant idea. And it seemed to me quite obvious that the logical consequence of that is that if you do not display a permit, then we will follow up on that and make sure that you are paying your taxes and getting a permit. When you say that you don't think that revenue should be allowed to share information with BDS, you're basically saying that we should have two bureaucracies do duplicate work. And finally, I do have to say that people who are renting out their homes to strangers to say that they're, and people who, if they did seek a permit, that would be a matter of public record, to say that they have, that those who are not seeking a permit have a huge privacy right in their addresses seems a little bit of a stretch.
I think you misunderstand. I'm saying that the data itself, whether regardless of the actions that you describe, there are principles that operate relative to how internet platforms share data with government and under what circumstances. And while this seems like an obvious one, I revert to the history of the development of the internet, where you have previously diffuse commerce now being centralized in one point of contact, regardless of the industry. You could use any industry where that engages in online commerce. It creates a tantalizing single point of contact for regulators to seek data to enforce a raft of different laws. And we have made decisions about how we want to govern that relationship between government's ability to simply ask for and obtain that data outside of formal legal process. And that is, we may disagree, and I understand that we do on that fundamental point, but I think what is positive is that we can craft a solution that doesn't, I think, bump into those issues for us. I can't speak for other operators in the field, and I would suggest, if nothing else, considering, as you move forward, an amendment, at least on the tax and the data provision, which would exempt a platform which has already engaged a voluntary collection agreement with the city that is operating, that the Revenue Bureau feels like is accomplishing the goals of collecting the revenue in a way that's verifiable.
But we can't take your word for it.
I'm not asking you to take my word, sir. I'm asking you to take the Revenue Bureau's as to the sufficiency of the collection and whether they are confident that they are receiving.
That's like me telling my son, I'm going to give you a specially big Christmas present because this year you were truthful.
But that we don't do, but when we have in the franchise agreements where we collect 5% from our franchise partners, we don't get their data. We periodically audit them to make sure that they're paying the right amount of tax. We could do this for this to make sure we've got the right amount of tax. There's other ways other than getting the individual addresses and checking them.
Maybe, but we don't tell hotel, motel operators, B&Bs, and others that they can mask their address and make it twice as complicated for us to do enforcement.
Well, it'd be interesting to find out how do we make sure that the hotels are paying the right amount of tax on. I mean, aren't we currently suing the online providers to try to capture more of the taxes from Priceline and such?
Yes, and actually that's a great point because the online providers in that case said they are not governed by our rules, and I'm a little concerned here that there's a pattern here. Uber comes into town and says, we're not governed by your rules. Congratulations, Mayor and Commissioner Novick for putting an end to that. You have come and said this is a new technology and it would be a violation of privacy. What I would love to hear is that representing a responsible employer that the mayor has welcomed with open arms, if we adopt these amendments, you intend to comply with them.
I'm here to express the concerns that I've raised, and I appreciate your point. And what I can absolutely do, regardless of what happens today or next month, is commit to continuing to work with the city and the relevant agencies to increase compliance as much as possible on our platform.
But could you? I think it's a fair question, Mayor. When this is coming back for a second reading, in
yes.
June, would you consider furnishing us with a letter prior to the vote on this as to whether it's the official position of Airbnb that they do or do not intend to comply with these rules?
I will certainly take this spirit of discussion back to folks, and they will be very interested in understanding what we all discussed here as well as the issues that you raised.
And in fairness, if you have a completely different approach that you believe balances privacy and some of the legal issues you've raised differently but gets to the same result, would you share that with us?
Absolutely, and would love along those lines to continue this conversation outside of the scope of a piece of legislation which until very recently we were not invited to participate in providing feedback on, and work with you to accomplish a solution, at least insofar as our community is concerned, that helps the city achieve its regulatory goals while not impacting some principles that I think a lot of people, and you'll find a lot of people here in Portland who are not necessarily parts of our community, feel very strongly about as well.
Well, I appreciate that. I think there, again, I'm going to bring staff back up in a few minutes when the testimony's done, but there may be some elements of this that'll make it easier, not harder. I think we may be missing one piece here, and that is the hosts are required to get a business license, and you have to disclose your address when you file for a business license.
That's my understanding
of
the ordinance.
So The addresses are already in the house here.
So I think we're getting all of the tax, the enforcement, all of those things complicated. I also think we're missing the point that this is the representative of a company that's actually been working with us and is giving us the taxes. So to the extent that there's a lot of ire, it's really at the folks who are not in this room, who are not paying the taxes and not getting the permits, that we have even bigger of a problem. So I really appreciate you being here, you're working with us, and I hope that there will be some scope for looking at, if not this, then what. Would you be willing to comply with the suggestion, which I thought this was originally going the way we were going, which was simply to require a permit number to be posted?
So as I mentioned when I was here previously, we, at the suggestion of your department, amended the website, the platform pages here in Portland, to create a field that's currently voluntary, and I'm more than happy to go back and chat with folks about what that looks like if it becomes a mandatory field. I'm not certain of the regulatory interest and the difference if the field is present. I think the message is sent whether there's
a
number
there
or not.
Wait a second. You've had a long time to think about that, and you're now saying you're going to go back and talk about it. That was framed at the last hearing and has had a ton of discussion. And the truth is, if that permit number is listed with the property on your platform, anybody can go pull the permit and figure out the address. So there is no privacy. Once the permit is listed, as the mayor noted, you can anyone with a little bit of time can figure out what that address is. You do not have a position today as to whether you would be willing to comply with that requirement?
The concern which I actually had raised with your staff and with others on this point was the implication in the ordinance as it's drafted that any platform, ours or others, would be subject to fine if we had not verified the validity of any information that a user had input.
No, sir, that's not what this says, and we'll bring Thomas up. We're not asking you to be the cop. This is no different than someone, an employer, asking someone to show a Social Security number. An employer doesn't have to hire a law firm to determine whether it's a valid Social Security. It's presumed valid. All you would be required to do is compel a host to fill out that screen with the permit number. And if they committed a fraudulent act and deceived you, this doesn't put you in harm's way. This allows us to go after them.
On a technical point, I'm not certain that I agree with your reading of the language in the ordinance. And it sounds like we may be in agreement about how we would like that to operate. But it was a concern for us in reading the ordinance that it didn't appear that that was the case.
You're worried that you would have to independently verify the permit as opposed to require that it be part of the field?
Correct, and I simply don't want to provide a misrepresentation to this city or any other that we can scalably do that in 192 countries around the world.
I get that, but I think the question is, and it's a legitimate one about who's liable for misrepresentation. I get that, and we ought to run that issue to ground and find out what the answer is, or whether there are different ways to craft this ordinance that would get us a different answer, because it doesn't sound like. And I certainly don't have this belief that if a host in one of these platforms provided invalid information, it would seem to me, if not forgivable, at least low on our in prioritization of enforcement problems, that we would go chase around the platform for somebody else's misrepresentation. Because the person that's responsible to register and get the business license is not you, it's your host, right?
There might merit even be an asterisk on the field saying that providing false information to us is potentially a violation of state law, of city code, which could subject the host to liability. I mean, we hope there's enough good faith, but part of what Thomas Lanham wants to be able to see is go to the page and see that there's a permit number. If someone is so sophisticated, they want to game us by having an improper. He can do a spot check every month. He could do a random selection just to see whether people. But that's of what I don't think that's your. I don't think the intent was to make that your problem, unless you failed to require them to give you a permit number. That's the only time you're in harm's way, because then you'd be advertising something without a permit number.
And that's something that I would support. It's the additional pieces in here that require the addresses. That I share some of the concerns, not only of Mr. Owen, but also the Internet Association letter.
Okay. appreciate
thank you.
Your testimony, all three of you, and your willingness to be part of this spirited debate. Actually, I want to bring our revenue staff back up.
We have one more person
mm-hmm. to speak, and then we'll bring the revenue staff back up. So thank you.
Marianne Schwab.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everyone. Marianne Schwab, Inner Southeast Sunnyside Neighborhood. I had everything all prepared for today until I sat and listened to this jibber-jabber, voluntary, mandatory, shared economy,